Blog Talk Radio.
Plumber in Tent City, Mr. President. If I could ask you one simple question, is how could you make Timothy Guyton the head of the Treasury? You know what? Never mind, I get it. You don't even have to say. You're just a spokesman, right? Same snake, new face. Aim the Hope for Change campaign. Seriously, that was clever. Cause hope is just a word, and you're the best lie ever. That's 16 months and to start bringing him back. But you haven't even expanded. Now you're trying to pass a draft. You said you cared about our families, but now it's clear to see that you don't give a fuck about us. All you care about is wealth, not peace, not dreams. Certainly not me, but I don't see you as my chief. You're just a white collar thief, another Tavistock production, trilateral connection, a Bilderberg commercial, and kissing just little messenger. I heard you with Kennedy, yes, I'm thinking more like Mussolini with your youth brigades and stars. Yeah, just call him now, I see him, and say, yes, we can, yes, we can, yes, we can. What? I just got one more question. Hey, Obama, where you taking?
He was a righteous man. The sort of people invite this man to make newer policies, the same laws they never will see. Just to support righteous men. Why did the people invite this man to make newer policies? Somebody help me please understand.
Yeah, a black man in a white place. Yo, the Uncle Tom of my space. Yeah, yo, I'm glad I went and said it. I'll say it and I'll say it loud. Yo, fuck the president. No sucker boo, this silly cat's trying to rob you.
Yo, say what, yo, what you mean he trying to get us? An intelligent black man, I think you're jealous.
Yo, sucker, please go do your research. The Big New and Kissinger were his teachers.
Yo, why you gotta go and hate on a brother? You know that's what they want us to do to each other.
Yo, true that, but the truth takes precedence. All anyone can really do is weigh the evidence.
And if you can't see the Wall Street cronies claiming all the turf for themselves and they homies, then you about to get jacked for your home. When you out on the street and you can't get a loan, in case you're thinking, would you do it again? Give your vote to a black man just because he said he was a righteous man.
The sort of people invite this man to make newer policies, the same laws they never will see. Just to support righteous man. Why did the people invite this man to make newer policies? Somebody help me please understand.
No, you're not the righteous man. No, no. No, you're not the righteous man. No.
All right. Wow, the weather is getting a little bit rough out here. I'm broadcasting outside on the nice, fine patio. Overlooking the ocean. Today's date is September 21st, 2011 AD. Somewhere in the United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun, I'm your host, Dr. C. Rock Jones. There's been some interesting news today, folks. Interesting. A lot of stuff going on. Obama, the class warrior, Fox News, Fox Nation. I wear that charge as a badge of honor, he says. Obama, the class warrior, fighting for the little man, fighting for the middle class. Now, you're already hearing the Republicans in Congress dusting off the old talking points. You can write their press releases, he says. Class warfare. They say, you know what? If asking a billionaire to pay the same rate as a plumber or a teacher makes me a warrior for the middle class. I wear that charge as a badge of honor. I wear it as a badge of honor because the only class warfare I've seen is the battle that's being waged against the middle class folks in this country for a decade now. So let's just be clear. We've disputed this notion that millionaires and billionaires pay less taxes than the average American citizen. In fact, completely half of this country pays no taxes whatsoever. None, mind you. For those of you out there who get a refund, a tax refund at the end of the year, of all of the money that you put in to the system during the course of the year, that means you're actually paying no taxes. Well, that's right. You're loaning the government money, and at the end of the year, they're giving it back to you. That's not paying taxes. Here's what's paying taxes. At the end of the year, last year, Dr. C. Robert Jones, your humble host here, paid $38,742 in taxes. I paid that money. I got no refund. None. I paid. Half of this country pays no taxes. The plumber, depending on how much money he makes, pays very little, if anything, in taxes. There's no tax payment going on here, folks. So if Obama says that the little man, that he's fighting for the little man, and he wears that as a badge of honor, then he has no badge of honor, and he has no honor. Because he's lying to you. He's lying to me. He's lying to all of us. Just like Bill Clinton lied when he said that he did not have sex with that woman, Ms. Lewinsky. He lied. It's just that simple. And so now your great fine president is lying to you. He's a lying sack of shit. To say that asking a billionaire to pay the same rate as a plumber or a teacher makes him a warrior in the middle class, then he wears that as a badge of honor. It makes no sense whatsoever. And he's getting away with it for the most part because Republicans are not taking advantage of this outright lie. That's what it is, folks. Don't trust me. Just listen to what's going on. Listen to what's happening. Obama says that you guys are paying taxes, more taxes than a millionaire or a billionaire. Now, last night, we refuted that notion with cold, hard facts. It's simply not the case. In fact, the 10% of the households with the highest income pay more than half of all federal taxes. They pay more than 70% of federal income taxes, according to the Congressional Budget Office, a nonpartisan operation. So when Obama says these things, he's lying. He's outright lying. And what he's doing is he's seeking to divide this nation. It's us versus them with this clown. And that's pretty much how it is. It's us versus them. Now, hey, like I said, don't take my word for it. Look it up. I mean, look it up for yourselves. It's an honest situation where the Obama administration is seeking to tell you something that is blatantly false, blatantly untrue. That's just the way it is. So now, let's look at some more facts, because that's how I like to roll. I love giving my opinion, don't get me wrong. I dig it. But I also really dig cold, hard facts. Now, this is an issue where the Democrats have problems with. Facts. Putting it out there, telling it like it is, and then saying, hey, deal with it. Refute the facts. Odds are they can't do it. Facts are the enemy of the left. Reason is the enemy of the left. They don't want to hear it. So right now we're going to take a short break. and then we'll come right back. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. We'll be right back.
Good morning, January 20th, 2017, the last day of Barack Obama's 8 years as president.
8 tough years for many as unemployment continues climbing.
With debt to China reaching record levels, some analysts believe the Chinese have overtaken the United States.
8 years ago, we were promised hope. Today, many believe their American dream has been lost.
The Republican National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Why is Ayn Rand's great novel Atlas Shrugged a bestseller today, more than half a century after it was written? It's because our real world today is just like the fictional future that Rand foresaw in Atlas Shrugged. It's a time of crisis and decay, but it's also a world of innovation and achievement. It's a world of heroes and villains, driven by very different philosophies. We wrote I Am John Galt to tell their stories. We look at the heroic innovators who are building our world and show that they're doing it just like the heroes of Ayn Rand's novels. They're using her philosophy of capitalism, reason, objective reality, and self-interest. Who is John Galt? Meet John Allison, the mild-mannered Southerner who created one of America's greatest banking empires. He did it with Ayn Rand's philosophy by getting every one of his tens of thousands of employees to read Atlas Shrugged and live by its code. In the great financial crisis of 2008, his bank was about the only one that didn't need a government bailout. But the government forced Allison to take TARP money anyway. After that, Allison walked away, just like John Galt did. There's so many other Rand heroes in our midst. There's Bill Gates, the genius who built the world's greatest company and the world's greatest personal fortune, only to have his own government call him a criminal for succeeding too much. Isn't he just like Hank Reardon from Atlas Shrugged? And how about Steve Jobs, the brilliant entrepreneur who reinvented computers, movies, music, telephones, just because he thought it was so cool? He's got the same attitude toward life as Howard Roark from Rand's other great novel, The Fountainhead. Build it? I don't care if they come. You'll meet some real-life Rand villains in our book, too, the parasites who are trying to destroy the world. Remember Wesley Mooch from Atlas Shrugged, the corrupt bureaucrat who destroyed the economy? That's Congressman Barney Frank, who spent years subsidizing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in the name of altruism. When Fannie and Freddie nearly wrecked the U.S. housing market, what did Frank do? Just like Mooch, he demanded wider powers. And you'll meet Paul Krugman, the rabid partisan pundit who spread socialism from the pages of the New York Times and thinks nothing of using the power of the press to destroy his political enemies. He's Ellsworth Toohey, the scheming, dwarfish newspaper columnist straight from the pages of The Fountainhead. These are some of the heroes and villains who move our world. So who is John Galt? I am. You can be too. Read our book and find out how.
And we are back with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. All right, so let's report then. There are folks calling for President Obama to leave. Just give up. Just say, hey, you know what? It's not working out. The hope and change thing is just not doing it for me. It's not doing it for you, the American people, and I'm going to step down. That's what folks are saying, that he should step down. There are those who are also saying that President Obama is deliberately killing jobs, that he is deliberately forestalling jobs in this country. Deliberately killing jobs. There's an article in the Washington Times that says, what else can you say about a president who leaves 60,000 Americans jobless? Obama deliberately kills jobs. The article reads, in his job speech last week, President Obama demanded that Congress pass his new stimulus proposals right away. This was his constant refrain, right away, right away, right away. On a key proposal aimed to appeal to Republicans, free trade agreements with South Korea, Colombia, and Panama, Mr. Obama is the very first person, the very person who was and still is preventing a vote. Congress does not have the legal authority to vote on that proposal until Mr. Obama officially submits the agreements to Congress. Now, in his State of the Union address in 2010, Mr. Obama appealed to congressional approval for the trades. He said, pass these trade agreements. Go ahead, pass my trade agreements, please, so we can get this country moving. The only problem was those agreements sat on his desk. He refused to send them to Congress for their signature. So what do you say about a president like that? When you have the president saying that the Congress of the United States is a do-nothing Congress, who are getting in his way, who's preventing job creation, and he doesn't send over signed documents that would create jobs right away, nearly 60,000 jobs right away, and all he needs to do is send a messenger with those documents from the White House to Congress for their signature. They're ready to sign them. He refuses to send them over. They're sitting on his desk. In March, April, and May, the president chose to make it impossible for Congress to act on creating jobs. In May, June, and July, as the economy sputtered and a growing consensus emerged that the United States could slip into a double-dip recession, Mr. Obama decided that it was better to do nothing. In August, after Mr. Obama learned that Standard & Poor's had downgraded America's debt, he chose to go on vacation rather than allow Congress to act on the job-creating trade agreement he had endorsed more than 18 months before. He went on vacation. It was all good. So what do you... The guy is a walking clown. He thinks that he is so smart that we're not going to figure these things out, that we don't have the intellect or the wherewithal to figure out that he is conning us. You know, I've often said that Obama, he wears a nice suit, he's got a nice smile, he talks a good game, but frankly, he's simply, as most politicians are, con artist. He's a con artist on the level of one of my favorite television shows, White Collar. The guy in the TV series looks good. He's very handsome. He's very classy. He's got a lot of style. And he's cool. And he talks a good game. And that's how he gets over. That's exactly what we were dealing with this president. He's attempting to make us all look like fools. It's hard to understand why the president hasn't submitted the agreements to Congress, because he seems to understand that exports create jobs. At least that's what he said repeatedly. Indeed, the figures from his own trade website reveal that the South Korean agreement alone would create more than 60,000 jobs. That's 60,000 jobs we could have had 2 years ago. And yet, the documents sit on Obama's desk. They just sit there. Well, I'm not so sure if they're actually on his desk, but they're somewhere in the White House, waiting to be sent over to Congress for their signature. Congress has already said, send the documents, and we'll sign them, and we'll get this thing going. He's refused to do that. Why is that? Ask yourself why. The guy does not do that, doesn't send the documents over. Now, some pundits have speculated that Mr. Obama plans to wage a Truman-style re-election campaign, meaning that he intends to run against a do-nothing Congress. When it comes to trade, however, he's a do-nothing president. He talks and talks and talks and talks, and Congress waits and waits and waits and waits for him to submit the agreements that he himself continues to praise. You know, unlike the do-nothing Congress, hey, Southern Sense is in the house, 2020 Radio Network, Beach Bums here, and all my guests, Ned King's in the house too. Glad you guys are here. Hey, is the president forestalling growth on purpose? Is he not sending over the necessary documents on purpose? He is attempting to pull the wool over the eyes of the American people, but here's the problem. There's something called the World Wide Web. If he wants to wage a Truman-style Congress do-nothing re-election campaign, he's going to have a hard time doing that. The blogosphere is alive. We don't get our news from one or two newspapers with the president saying one thing and the Congress saying the other. What we do get is a lot of information. Information is what I'm the same type of information that I'm giving you right now, which is, by the way, not my opinion, not right now, but cold, hard facts. Those documents sit somewhere in the White House. Now, it's cool to say they're sitting on his desk waiting to be sent over to Congress, but who knows where they're actually sitting. But all the guy needs to do is send them over. Why doesn't he do that? I mean, common sense. Let's talk common sense right now. If the president really wanted to create jobs, why not send those documents over to Congress? I'm tired of saying it. I'm hearing it in my own head. I'm saying it like five or six times to you guys. Why? Because it doesn't matter. He wants to blame. He needs to have somebody to blame. And to blame Congress for the lack of job creation because they don't put his policies into play is the way he wants to get reelected. And also, it's a way for him to also blame the rich. The fact that we don't have money coming into our government coffers is due to the fact that the rich aren't paying enough. Not the fact that he is spending us into oblivion, but the fact that the rich aren't paying enough. That's like saying that, I'm married and my wife makes more money than I do. I make, say, $60,000. She's pulling in $160,000. I'm spending my $60,000, and I'm spending $60,000 of her $160,000, and the money's all gone, and we're pretty much broke, and I'm blaming her for not bringing enough money in for me to spend. I mean, that's the best analogy I can come up with. So the guy is he's lying to us, folks. If Mr. Obama submits the agreements and Congress falls into gridlock, then the president can have a case. He'll have a case. Until then, however, he may want to cut back on all this lying and all these lectures and all this rhetoric about what must be done right away. How about this, Mr. President? Right away, send those documents signed, sealed, and delivered over to Congress. Let them sign them or not sign them. They talk about how the Congress is a do-nothing Congress. But that's not your agenda, is it, Mr. Obama? No, no, no. Your agenda is to make somebody look bad, someone else look bad, so that you can look good. And why the Republican candidates for president aren't throwing this out there, I'll never know. Somebody should be calling this guy's and pulling this guy's chain and putting this into play. Why aren't they? One can only speculate as to why we're not getting the full story here from the Republican candidates. Why not? I mean, they can't be this inept. They really need to come right out and put it out there for us. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
Britt Hume has some thoughts on how the White House is dealing with the economy right now. Good evening, Britt.
Hi, Brett. The evidence mounts that no one in the high councils of the Obama administration has an idea of how to get the economy out of its current rut. Senior advisor David Axelrod recited the familiar litany on Sunday. You know, we inherited a huge mess from George W. Bush. The stimulus really has made things better. Yes, we need tough new financial regulations to avert another scandalous Wall Street collapse. He insisted the administration is not anti-business, and it may not be. But the president has never worked for, let alone run, a business, and nearly all those around him are from the worlds of politics, government, and academia. The possibility that businesses are not investing in hiring because of deep uncertainty about everything from taxes to credit to regulation seems lost on them. They believe deeply that the driving force in a robust economy is aggregate demand, and that dispensing cash through government spending is a way to stimulate that demand. But what seems to be needed now is not just investment to meet current demand for products. What's needed now is investment in the expectation that the products produced will themselves create demand, and that the rewards for taking the risk will not be taxed away by a government insatiable for revenue to cover its spending and insistent upon ever more regulation to keep greedy businesses in line. In other words, lower taxes, lighter regulation, and less government spending. The exact opposite of the policies now in place. Brett?
Brett, what do you think the likelihood is that this administration will heed the advice or recommendations of this debt commission?
Well, remember, the debt commission does not report till after the fall election. And
the
political landscape may look very different indeed then. The big majorities the Democrats have enjoyed are likely to be gone. They may even be the minority party on Capitol Hill. The situation for President Obama may be very different. So the big challenge he may decide to face then is not more social spending, not new big government entitlement programs or further such programs, but tackling perhaps this debt problem. And if he does that, the commission may be the roadmap, and he might find a lot of Republican support for it.
But
might.
This administration you could see shifting that much?
That's why I said might.
All right, Brett, thanks.
All right, and we're back with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Hey, I got a couple of clips I want to play for you that happened earlier today, and I think you'll find them interesting. But first, will scandal drive Obama off the 2012 ticket? Scandal. Iran-Contra-style scandal. I'm talking Monica Lewinsky-style, or worse. There are those who suggest that President Obama will not run in 2012. Now, I'm taking a little bit of what I'm about to say from an article called Solving the Democrats' Obama Problem. It's a blog. Now, President Obama will not run in 2012. That's what some are predicting. And here's some of the reasons why. His presidency is in shambles. It's shriveling up before our very eyes. His political poll numbers continue to weaken daily. Unemployment remains stubbornly high for an extended period of time, not seen since the Great Depression. The economy is listless. Consumer sentiment is in the toilet. Foreclosures are ratcheting up. Now even me, your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones, is beginning to see his friends are coming to him saying that, hey, I'm losing my home. I bought a $450,000 home. I can no longer afford it. I tried to work with the bank. The banks won't work with me anymore. Now we're moving into a much smaller home, and we're going to have to go ahead and abandon this house. My own personal friends are coming to me now, and that's pretty bad. Because now I can put a face to it. I can say, hey, I know somebody who's going through this. Well, before I really couldn't. No economic variable has improved under this president. And some continue to worsen. The nation risks sovereign bankruptcy as a result of Obama's out-of-control spending. What president spends more money than he takes in? Knowing fully well... tax and spend, that might have worked in the 1980s, but not now. We can no longer afford it. Southern Sense is in the chat room, and she writes, oh, Bozo will run, but who will have the courage to be called a racist and run against him? I don't know. The economy, I mean, the guy, he's got a stacked deck against him. Every time Obama speaks, he shows himself as more and more and more and more out of touch with the nation, with the people, and the needs of most Americans. When he says he understands the needs, he's obviously an embarrassment. And he's alienated independents and even a lot of liberals. He now appears to have adopted a strategy, easy for you to say, to appeal to the most radical in his party. That's it. Now, either he's trying to avoid a shutout in the coming election by locking up some small number of votes, or he's delusional. Does anyone know which? I think I do. Seasoned Democrats are dumbfounded by his performance. Seeming to believe the delusional possibility. And radicals have already rejected him and threatened to run a candidate in the primary, Ralph Nader, of all people, who had his heyday when I was 11 years old. I was 11 years old when Ralph Nader was the man. And he's threatening to run. Dennis Kucinich is threatening to run. I don't know, Al Gore, he's out there where the buses don't run, but there are people out there who are saying Hillary should run and she could win this time. There are folks who are looking for alternative candidates to President Barack Obama. Would you have thought this to be the case just a year ago? The guy's poll numbers were in the 70s. Even Republicans had him in the 60s. Now there's talk of replacing him on the ticket. There's talk that he might not even be on the ticket. There's talk of running a Democrat against him. Would you have believed this, folks? Would you have believed this a year ago? Certainly not during the first 100 days or the first 1,000 days or the 150 days, the 1,522 days. You wouldn't have believed it. So, despite everything, yes, Obama intends to run in 2012. None of what we've seen over the past year or so phases the narcissist in chief. He needs the spotlight like most of us need air to breathe. The Messiah, or the self-proclaimed one, does not see these problems. If he does, they're mere details, trivialities, nothing that can't be silver-tongued away. Because as Obama has said many times during the course of his tenure as president, maybe he simply hasn't explained it well enough to us. Perhaps he hasn't communicated things well enough to us. The reality is Obama is done. His false magic is done. We see the man behind the curtain. We see that the emperor is butt-ass naked. Not naked, naked, as we say in the black community. Obama is naked. Butt-ass naked. And we see through him. We see that he can't string a sentence together without the aid of a mechanical device. We see that he departed such great wisdom earlier today, I think it was today, when he said that to the UN General Assembly, peace is hard. Wow. I know small children who could have come up with something better than that. Peace is hard. The guy is a moron. I'm telling you right now, an empty suit. My dog could have come up with something more profound than to stand in front of the UN General. If my dog were propped up in front of the UN General Assembly, he would have come up with something a whole lot better and deeper than peace is hard. No, what's hard, Obama, is your head. You are an idiot. Just plain and simple. The reality is the guy is done. He has become a cartoon figure, a cartoon character to many Americans and a whole lot of foreigners. Familiarity has produced contempt for this man. Do we see him going on Jay Leno? No. Is he on any of the nightly shows? Has he gone on The View lately? No. Because he knows that he's pretty much done. He's a fraud. He's a fraud. A man who never was anything other than a carefully scripted and beautifully executed marketing campaign. This is what happens when you put your money and you put a guy together. Does anybody remember the movie Dave? Does anybody remember the movie Dave where I can't remember the name of the actor who played Dave, where he is substituting for the president. And he's doing such a horrible job at first because he looks just like the president. They could be twins. And so he's substituting for the president, and he has to be polished up to look and act and sound and feel like the president. This is what we have here. What we have here is the Wizard of Oz in reverse. Not in reverse, just the Wizard of Oz. He's a fraud. A fraud. And we can all see it. The marketing campaign, the product, it no longer works. Marketing made the first sale. Americans were sold on hope and change, not having any idea what that hope and change entailed. It just sounded good. It sounded great. I mean, I was that great. I mean, years ago, oh baby, I really love you. I mean, I just want to spend the rest of my life with you. I just think that you are the one for me. I mean, whenever I'm with you, I just feel magic. Lying. I was lying and lying and lying and lying. And she ate it up. I had a goal in mind. There was something I wanted. And I got it. Because I was a silver-tongued bastard. And I tell you what, it worked many times. And here's what happened. When you can talk, you're going to screw somebody. And here's what happened. America got screwed because the guy talked just like I did. Hope and change. The waters will recede. The sun will shine. I'm going to give the American people what they want. We're going to have a new style of politics. We're going to have a new way of doing business. No more red states, no more blue states, but the United States of America. We're going to fundamentally transform the United States of America. Basically, what he was saying was, bend over, honey. Bend over. That's what he was saying. Bend, raise up your skirt and bend over. And for the most part, many Americans raise their skirt, lowered their undies, and bent over. Please forgive me for being crude. That's what happened. And it worked the first time. Now, the silver-tongued bastard comes back and tries that same thing again with the same lady, Lady America. Guess what? Lady America is wise now because he didn't call back. He didn't call back after she bent over. He didn't call, but now he comes around again, asking for the same thing. The lady's wise. First sale, done. Second time around, not so good. Success is repeated only if the product performs. Snake oil is never purchased a second time. Instead, the brilliant problem-solving uniter much of the nation believed in, that they were buying into, they got an incompetent, small, and not very likable person. One could always count on President Obama's likability factor. Well, you know, they've stopped. The pundits have stopped saying what I'm about to say. Well, you know, they like the president personally, but they don't believe that he has the right formula for the economy. They're not saying that they like him personally anymore, because those poll numbers have come down to earth as well. Remember when Obama's likability numbers were up there still in the 60s and 70s? Likability. Oh, we like the president. No, no, no. Those are down in the 40s now, along with everything else. So folks don't even like the guy anymore because they realize he's an incompetent boob. Mr. Obama lives in his own world, folks, surrounded by sycophants. They undoubtedly know his run is over, just as you and I do, and that he no longer fools most of the people, even some of the time. And, of course, just like the emperor who was butt-ass naked, they're afraid to tell him. Dude, you don't have no clothes on. Go put some underwear on. Put on a shirt. They're afraid to tell him. We are witnessing a modern-day political tragedy, not unlike the one that occurred with my main man, whom I love. I don't care what anybody says. Richard Milhouse Nixon. I dig the guy. Now let's take a listen to one of my clips here, and tell me what you think. While the tractor goes by, raking the sand on the beach, because I'm outside and there's beach over there. All right, so I'll be right back. Take a listen to this clip, and then let's talk about it. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
President Obama called again for a quick passage of his jobs bill during his weekly media address today. Our latest CBS News New York Times poll puts his approval rating at just 43%, his lowest yet. And as Wood Johnson tells us, his jobs plan is proving a tough sell, even to some Democrats.
How are you? To sell America on his plan for the economy, President Obama will need support from Democrats like Joshua Scannell.
He hasn't done much to please me since he's been in office.
A former Obama 08 campaign activist, Scannell has little faith in the president's new jobs bill.
I think that it's a bad bill. I think that it's a bill that doesn't actually produce the kind of jobs that we need.
In a recent CBS News New York Times poll, 47% of Americans say they are not confident that the American Jobs Act will put people back to work.
How long have you been working?
Still, President Obama is crisscrossing the country, arguing his combination of tax cuts and investments is the best way forward.
Everything in the American Jobs Act is the kind of idea that's been supported by Democrats and Republicans before.
But some Democrats on Capitol Hill aren't convinced. Oregon Congressman Peter DeFazio says, as the bill stands now, he won't vote for it.
More than half of it is tax cuts, and quite frankly, tax cuts don't work. We've been doing tax cuts for 11 years.
Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia doesn't like the price tag.
The ugly part of that act is $450 billion of spending after we've spent. And I've said if spending would have cured our problems, we'd have no problems. We'd be talking about it right now.
68% of Americans seem to agree, saying President Obama has made no real progress on the economy. If that doesn't change, even lifelong Democrats like Scannell might stay home come November 2012, putting the president's reelection in jeopardy.
I'd probably vote for Obama, but if I don't have to, I won't.
All right, so there we have it. No POTUS without the TOTUS. Somebody should make a bumper sticker out of that. If Southern Sense does not copyright that, if it's not copyright, you know what? Tomorrow morning, first thing, I'm going to get on the phone Loom and find out if POTUS without the TOTUS has been copyrighted. Because if it hasn't, I've got T-shirts coming your way. So tell me, Southern Sense, is no POTUS without the TOTUS copyrighted? Because if it's not, it belongs to me first thing tomorrow morning. I tell you what. All right, so now we've got President Obama. Poll numbers dropping, enthusiasm wanes, because for some reason the guy thinks that we're all a bunch of morons. I don't know why. He thinks that maybe he hasn't explained it enough for us, or maybe that he hasn't silver-tongued his way into our hearts anymore. Maybe that we're pretty much done. But I like the way my man Mitch McConnell put it down earlier today. I think it was earlier today or late yesterday. It's a long clip, but I really like for you to listen to it because I'm not sure if you guys heard him, but he makes so much sense. Listen to Mitch McConnell. The clip is about 6 minutes long, so check it out. But really, the only reason why I'm playing such a long clip is because it really does cut to the heart and the meat of the matter, and I really want to share it. So please bear with me. Listen to this clip and tell me what you think. I'd really like to know. The call-in number is 347-884-8500, and you're on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report out here on the beach. It's windy, and the truck is going by again to rake the beach, to rake the sand. So I'm going to go to the clip right now before the truck comes makes its way back around. Here we go.
There's been the debate in the past week about the latest proposals coming out of the White House about whether the president's latest stimulus bill or the tax hikes he's proposing will help or hurt the economy. But based on what we're hearing from the White House this week, it's hard to see the point in having any debate at all. I'm referring, of course, to a comment by the White House communications director who told the New York Times on Monday that the president had entered what he referred to as a new phase. He said the president may have worked with Republicans to avert a government shutdown last spring and to raise the debt ceiling this summer, but that, quote, that phase is behind us, end quote. In other words, the White House isn't interested in actually accomplishing anything anymore. It's more interested in making a point than making a difference. So here's my question. How do you explain to the 14 million Americans looking for a job right now that you're more interested in motivating campaign supporters than in motivating businesses to hire? For the past week, the president's been running around the country trying to set a record for the number of times he can say, pass this bill right away in a 5-minute stump speech. Meanwhile, his communications director is telling people the president doesn't really expect the bill to pass. And the Democratic majority leader of the Senate is treating it like a legislative afterthought. My friend, the majority leader, said yesterday he might take up this supposedly urgent bill next month after he's had a chance to deal with the Chinese currency bill and a few others. As for the other Democrats in Congress, well, they're not exactly rushing to get it in the queue either. I mean, this so-called jobs bill seems to be about as popular as Solyndra, and I'm just talking about among Democrats. Yet the president's out there acting like somebody's actually putting up a fight. So this whole thing is a charade, and I think the American people deserve better. I think they deserve a president who realizes that governing involves working with a situation as it is, not as you would like it to be. President Obama may think the best way to distract people from the challenges we face is to stand near a bridge in a swing state and pit one group of Americans against another and hope his critics look bad if they don't go along with him. But I don't think he's fooling anybody. I don't think all the campaign stops in the world are going to convince most Americans that the real cause of our problems lies anywhere other than with the policies that are coming out of Washington these days, or that the single greatest obstacle to job creation in America today are policies that punish the risk takers and the entrepreneurs, that stifle investment and private enterprise rather than rewarding it. When it comes right down to it, I think most Americans care more about results than about rhetoric. And let's be honest, the results of this president's economic policies speak for themselves. After 2.5 years of government spending, here's what we've got: record deficits, chronic unemployment, median incomes going down, poverty rates going up, and a first ever credit downgrade. This isn't exactly a record to be proud of. So I can understand the president wanting to change the topic. It might make him feel better. It might energize his strongest supporters. But here's something it won't do. It won't create jobs. Look, if we could solve our jobs crisis and revive the economy by passing the hat at Warren Buffett's annual shareholders meeting, we'd have done it by now. But we can't. Why? Because that's not a real solution. It's a campaign slogan. The president said the other day that tax hikes he's proposing aren't class warfare. He said they're math. Well, we can do math, too. So let's do the math. According to the IRS, if you doubled the tax burden on everybody in America who earned more than $1 million in 2009, you'd cover the cost of about 3 months of deficit spending around here. If you doubled the tax burden on everybody in America who earned more than $1 million back in 2009, you'd cover the cost of about 3 months of the deficit we're running around here. If you confiscated every dime of taxable income from those the president refers to as millionaires and billionaires, take it all, you wouldn't even cover a single year of deficit spending in Washington right now. Spending more money in Washington won't solve our spending problem. It will enable it. How about the stimulus? One of the programs in the stimulus was supposed to create 65,000 jobs. So far, it's created 3,500 at nearly $11 million per job. $11 million per job. Solyndra was supposed to create thousands of permanent jobs. 2 years later, more than 1,000 Solyndra employees are out of work altogether. And the American taxpayer is on the hook for more than $500 million in loans to the company. But here's the most important calculation. Not a single new job will come about as a result of the tax hikes the president proposed this week. Not one new job. As the National Federation of Independent Business puts it, new tax increases on America's biggest job creators are the last thing the economy needs to get back on track. What else do we need to know? Republicans are ready to work with the president on turning this economy around. We know what would work, and after the past 2.5 years, we've certainly seen what won't work. So my suggestion to the president is the same now as it's been for months. Put aside the political playbook. Work with us on policies that will actually solve the problems Americans care about the most. Let's work together on policies that are aimed at motivating job creators, not your political base. It's time to change course.
Indeed, it's time to change course. But there are those, many, many of those, who are saying that the president cannot and will not change course because to do so would be admitting that the course he was originally on was wrong, and he's too much of a narcissist for that. He's too arrogant, he's too cocky to admit that what he was doing wasn't working. This is who many Americans elected to the White House, a man who has no interest in the actual country, in the people in this country, but his own selfish interest, which is to look good at all costs. It's a sad state of affairs. Now, my main man, Mitch McConnell, laid it out for you. And I've been saying it for months. If you confiscate all the wealth of the so-called millionaires and billionaires, even those making $250,000 a year, because those of us who make that kind of jack, we're lumped in there with the millionaires and billionaires and corporate jet owners, according to President Obama's own words. So even if he confiscated all this bread, even as Mitch McConnell said, it wouldn't make a dent. It's a slogan. It's a trick. It's all designed to turn us against each other. American pitted against American. I suppose when Barack Obama said that he was much like Lincoln, could it be that he meant that he was much like Lincoln in the fact that America is going to be divided one way or the other? That we're going to be pitted against each other, brother against brother? Hey, my brother's is dirt poor. And he's complaining that President Obama, he voted for President Obama and Obama didn't give him a job. And now he's mad at Obama because he thought that when a black man came into office, that he was going to be taken care of with a job. Now, I'm his brother. I've got, you know, pretty good stash. I don't want to brag. You know, I made some pretty good investments along the way. I'm good. You know, I got a couple of good businesses going on. It's all good for me. So what's going to happen? Is my brother going to turn on me and say, hey, you're making, you know, pretty good money. You know, Obama said you should give me some of your money. It's brother against brother. It's us versus them. It's the we-they syndrome. It's American against American, poor against the rich, or so-called rich. It's a mess. That's what this guy's created. That's what it's all about here in the United States of America, turning Americans against each other. That's what's happening here. What are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it? This guy has got to go. He has got to go, folks. I want to thank everybody for listening tonight. Beach Bum, Net King, Southern Sense, everybody who's in the room tonight, all my guests, 2020, thank you guys. I appreciate you being here. Have a great night. We are out. Oh, man. I'll be back at home tomorrow, and we will chat then. Tune in tomorrow for part two of this discussion. Good night, folks. God bless you. God bless the United States of America. I'm